Blog Talk Radio.
October 16th, 2013, in mere hours from now, we will find out if our lovely United States government will reopen or remain closed. If it's closed, we're going to go into default. But whose default is this really? And if it reopens, kids, it will stay open right now until January 15th, which is a long time in the future. That's way down the road, January 15th. John Cena is back doing Olympic-style weightlifting only weeks after suffering a torn triceps injury. But he's clean. He's clean. He's such a genetic freak. Meanwhile, a schmuck like me goes to work last night, gets informed I need to take a random drug test this morning. So after working all night, I go over there, get detained for 2 hours, experience extreme incompetence, and basically am treated like a criminal. So that tells me that John Cena's a little more important than me now, doesn't it? Meanwhile, Xavier Woods is starting to petition to get the Big Show back in the WWE. Christian scholar Joseph Atwill, a Bible scholar, has written a book claiming that Jesus Christ is a work invented by the Romans. Are any of these things true? Can any of this really be? Hey, it's up to you, because perception is reality, and that's the name of this show. And I am the loudmouth, wise guy, Trent Van Dries, sleep-deprived, pissed off, treated like crap today. The world's been shitting on me all week, so I'm going to be in rare form. Just to let you know right now, I'm already just mad. So let me introduce one of my co-hosts, the man behind the switchboard, the Georgia Jawjacker, Scary Larry Goodman. Larry, how are you doing, and how was your weekend, sir?
Well, it was interesting. My day was certainly better than yours, from what you've said.
Terrible.
You know, I had an interesting weekend in Nashville. We had fun Friday night at Saw, and I had not so much fun Saturday night at the Borough Brawl. But I got to say, you know, regarding your opening there, John Boehner's going to fold like a cheap suit, and the government's going to reopen, and, you know, there's not going to be any default. There's no way.
What's the point of opening until January 15th? Am I the only one that thinks this is just putting like a Band-Aid on a huge dam?
No, it's the classic cliche, kicking the can down the road. I mean, the stock market was up 200 points today. So
yeah,
those guys know there's going to be a deal. You know, they know in advance that, you know, they tell you, that tells you what's going to happen. There's going to be a deal. I mean, the deal is going to be passed. I mean, the Boehner's going to have to fold up here and go through with it. So I predict the government reopens in short order here.
Well, you're probably right. Well, before we went on the air, you mentioned that the star of our show had not yet joined us, so that's why I did that lovely long opening. That's called buying time in the business, Larry. Did I buy enough time? Is he on the line?
No, you didn't. You did not. Bill Behrens is not on the line, and this is a little bit odd because we talked just a few hours ago. So, nope.
Well, let's carry on and continue on then. Yeah, the show Saturday night, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, the Borough Brawl. Now, you mentioned to me, like a month ago, about going to this show, and I said, Larry, what are you thinking? Why would you want to go to the show? The show supposedly promoted by Roxy Rossi, but rumors that long-lost Mr. Crossfire Marcus Pastorius was actually the man behind the show. Mark Anthony going absolutely batshit crazy on Facebook, trying to discredit Pastorius at every turn. And Mark Anthony, of all people, you talk about perception is reality. Mark Anthony, he's for the fans. He's against the fans getting fucked. Mark Anthony is for the fans? That's like saying Attila the Hun is for the people. You know what I mean, Larry? Come on. Why? But you going to this show, of all the shows you could have picked, I'm bumfuzzled. I'm baffled. I'm bewildered and befuddled. Larry, what's going on?
I mean, you've been proven absolutely right. It was a complete waste of time, and I don't know what I was thinking to go to that show. And, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you my impression as far as the part about who ran it. I think it was Roxy Rossi's show. But I think she, she was relying on Marcus for help in running the backstage area and so forth. He definitely was there, and he was definitely involved. But I do believe it was her show. Despite opinions to the contrary, I think it was her. He might have gotten paid for his involvement, or I should say, she was paid for his involvement. But I do not believe it was actually his show.
Well, I was told, over a month ago, that he was calling around looking for a ring for the show with various people because, you know, the show was held in a bar, so they needed a ring, you know, with low ring posts because of a low ceiling. So he was at least involved in calling around looking for a ring. Past that, I don't know. But when you look at it, you just have to shake your head or laugh. You know, the show's an hour and 40 minutes long. What, a total of 7 wrestlers, 4 matches, a guy working twice. I think Damian Payne, John Wade Murdoch got like an emergency call to come over to work just to get a warm body. You know what I mean? It's just like, what? I don't know. I mean, it's at what point do you just fold your tent and say, you know, maybe we should just not do this tonight?
What are we talking about?
We're talking about the Borough Brawl show that I attended Saturday night, and I guess we'll just take a minute on my topic of choice, which is the whole business of what happened in the days when you had somebody who was listed on the card and wasn't there, somebody of significance, and it's never mentioned.
Who was the actual promoter? I know that our good friend Marcus Pastorius was there, but who was the promoter of record?
The actual promoter was Roxy Rossi, granddaughter of Len Rossi, third generation. In the pro wrestling business, and I have to say, I don't think she did her granddad proud in this situation, really. But
well,
it seems to me this has become
there's obviously a big difference between not having people show up and promoting people who may draw your crowd and not delivering them.
Yeah,
and
I don't know that.
And that's the key difference here that I think, you know, while there were good people there, they had some key people they promoted and some stuff they promoted that didn't happen. And that's, you know, that's not what you should do.
No, but this seems to be becoming more of a common practice at different shows I've been to where it's if somebody's not there who's of some significance and it just is never mentioned. You know, what happened to the old, you know, someone starting the show by saying so-and-so's not here for whatever reason and at least giving the crowd the heads up that person's not there.
Yeah, well, the card subject to change has allowed some promoters to decide that they can create booking suggestions and not deliver them. I mean, my good friend Ron, the Shooter Gossett, was infamous for that and probably still is. I believe he may be materializing in Kentucky, a regulated state, so that's even more entertaining.
Now, there's a difference between, like, a guy like Gossett, though, who's purposely advertising names that he full well knows are not going to be there, and a person, you know, that actually advertises a person and, you know, circumstances happen and the person legit cannot. I know back in the day, you know, it used to say card subject to change, but it would also say substitute bouts will be arranged, you know, as needed. You know, and, like, in California back in the day, Bill, if you didn't, you know, deliver your main event, you actually got in trouble with the athletic commission. That's how much things have changed. And
there are potential legal consequences. Somebody would have to push him because there is bait and switch, which is potentially actionable based on, you know, the amount of hurt involved. But the key really is that every time a promoter doesn't deliver what he or she says they're going to deliver, all of us that are involved in the business suffer at some level because it creates a lower level of confidence that you're going to deliver what you're supposed to.
Yeah, and even the WWE shows nowadays, they don't even deliver on all their stars at a house show. Just the other day, I don't know if it was a show in Philly or somewhere, but several people that were, you know, the way they do their cards, you look at their cards, they'll give you pictures of, it might even say stars who will appear or stars who may appear, but it could be very well be that only a few of those stars may actually appear. I know, like, right before when John Cena, before he got his surgery, he was scheduled on several cards, I think in California too, in the West Coast, that they knew he wasn't going to make. You know, that Bill, that's you know, like you said, you talk about bait and switch, that's in the area of like a straight-up fraud.
Yeah, yeah. With WWE, there's a catch-22 in that I personally believe they are in the rare position in our business that the brand draws more than the talent. And admittedly, some of the talent's very crucial. But, for example, in the upcoming pay-per-view, the key player on one of the posters is Ron Killings, and he may well not even be on the thing. At some level, WWE has made the decision, good or bad, that they're promoting a brand. I think to a great extent that's dramatically different than independent promoters booking talent that they purely control in terms of what they're paying and telling people they're going to be there because they don't have that level of confidence that they're going to deliver a decent show. At least the WWE, at least, you know, we hope, the fans that are going want the WWE show no matter who's there.
And just to be clear about the show Saturday night, I do believe, except for Tracy Taylor, who was on the poster for the global show in Alabama, the other people that weren't there were cancellations, and some of them late cancellations, specifically related to Marcus Pistorius being involved in the show. So I don't believe they were, you know, for the most part, they weren't advertising people that they knew weren't going to be there. They did run into some troubles very clearly with people canceling off because of Marcus.
No. Regrettably, Marcus made the mistakes he did and has that baggage. And were he smart, he would probably take some time away and let time potentially heal the problem.
And the thing is, Bill, and Larry could probably speak to this too. You know, as a fan, if you go to an indie show and so-and-so doesn't show up and so-and-so doesn't show up, and you if you bring that up to the promoter, Bill, or bring it up to the wrestlers, all you get for reaction, generally speaking, is like a shrug, and you get, this is wrestling. That's pretty much their reaction. You know, you don't really get much of a, listen, for me as a fan, if somebody gets sick, somebody has a car wreck, I'm understanding of that. I'm not just a dick about that, especially if somebody tries to arrange a sub. But when you're just screwing people, I don't know, but the attitude is very, very much, this is wrestling, and we're not bound to any type of obligation to deliver what we say we're going to deliver. At some point,
and what other form of entertainment could you get away with that, where you could just—it's a shrug, and there's no need to deliver.
And
now,
if I could
I don't disagree. It would be difficult for most other businesses to get away with it. The one area I think is different is and it's a very fine line, admittedly, is. There are people, and there aren't that many of us, but there are a few of us that deliver what we do on a storyline basis where everybody matters. And if somebody can't be there, what else we're doing usually is important. If we don't deliver the main event, we usually have a pretty damn good excuse. I think where the greatest fault comes into our business is where people leave their promotion by no storytelling. It's just matches, and they're promoting people. And if you are driving your company by the people you promote rather than the story you're telling, you're faced with the reality that you have to deliver those people because you can't deliver the story in the absence of those people.
And then a lot of times – go ahead, Larry.
No, I'm just saying we have a caller. Now, we've had callers before and nobody's yet come on the air, but we have a caller. Should we take a shot? And
I doubt that.
This person will speak.
Well, last time we had callers and nobody got through, but I understand, Larry, last time Dan Masters was trying to get through and you purposely would not let him get through. Is that true?
That is 100% true.
Well, I say we take a chance with this caller. What the hell? Why not?
Area code 615, you're on Perception with Reality.
Hi, this is Charles Chickenhead Hernandez.
Yay!
Hola, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo está, Carlos?
I'm fine. I'm on my way home from dinner. I should be arriving at 6:30. Right now I'm on a cell phone, and I'm listening to what you're saying. And I agree with what you're saying. They should have what they advertise, but there is such a thing as card subject to change. And I've been to many shows where they seem to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, like Charles and let's think like a Tony Falk show. Now, there's another thing, Bill, that gets me too. Some of these shows, weekly shows, they will advertise a spit for next week. Next Friday night, come back. We're going to have a body bag match. Oh, it's going to be wild. It's going to be a body bag match. Well, by the next week, that's completely forgotten. It's never mentioned again. And this, and maybe the spit is honored 40% of the time. And nobody... The thing I get, Bill, though, is just there's like a weird apathy that nobody seems to care if it's honored or not. It's a strange thing to me.
No, yep. It's not strange. It's unfortunate, and it should not happen. There are exceptions happen in a business where people get hurt, where things happen.
Yeah.
You have to be able to deal with that. But the reality is, it's sort of like there's no gray area in pregnancy. You know, if you're
right.
Pretty much pregnant or not. And if you're booked for a show, you either are or are not. And, you know, and so why somebody's not there can be explained if the promotion wants to. And sometimes even within storyline, for me, I think the biggest difficulty I have, people that are trying to present a storyline, don't deliver the storyline. To me, they're always making a greater mistake when they don't deliver what they're saying than the people that are just doing shows. Because if it's just this guy against this guy and you don't really give a damn, it's just two guys, they're out there wrestling, two girls, they're out there wrestling, four people, they're out there wrestling, it's just a match. If other people are in that spot, there's probably still going to be a match. Where I get the most upset is when people build a story and don't deliver on that. None of them are good, but I get more upset for the people that don't deliver on something that's trying to be the greater part of what our business is. It's the difference between booking and matchmaking. Any monkey can put two people together and put somebody over. Booking is the process of actually getting somebody over, and there's a major difference.
But
yes, and I would say that the show in Murfreesboro could have been booked by a monkey Saturday night. But
probably people... In matches, nothing led to anything, nor will lead anywhere.
No, and in this case, as I wrote in the report, it, you know, being that it was a bar show, I think that had a lot to do with it. But I don't think anybody could have cared less who got in that ring, or you know, I don't think it mattered in this case to anybody there.
And yet, in my experience, the rare times the companies I've managed bar shows, the bar shows did manage. No matter how sloppy they were, something always based on storyline happened. Sometimes truly entertaining, like when Sabu came in and had a bad night, it led to a really great night in Wildside history. So, you know, it everything's important. You've got to deliver what you say you're going to deliver and try to get out of it the best way you can. And the people that don't do that are just trying to get through the night. And that's not the way promoting needs to go. In fact, most of the better promoters, and I would even include, you know, somebody I had a long run with in Nashville, Bert Prentice. He's been taken to task for not delivering, but Bert delivers more than most folk will ever deliver. If he says somebody's going to be there, more often than not, that person's there.
No, I would agree with that. I don't remember that being a big problem on Bert shows.
You know, and most other, and there's lots of other folk that have a much greater problem with that. And I think it's those little things that separate the professionals in our business, even if they have their down and dirty side, the professionals from the amateurs.
But Bill, I want to say something and see what you think of this. It's the strange thing to me is the way these promotions do this, you know, just have whoever they want on the show. Doesn't matter who they advertise. Doesn't matter what the storylines are. It seems to me in the long term, it oddly works out in their favor in a way, because the fans that come to those shows generally end up not caring. And now there's a flip side of that. If the fans don't care, they don't care. But it just seems like, you know, as much as people bitch about internet fans and they're too critical, some of these fans at these shows are not critical at all. They don't, the fans don't care who's there. The fans don't care if the stiffs are honored. So in time, it's almost like these fans are conditioned to just accept this and go with it. I see that a lot.
I don't think there's an example of anyone drawing a real audience that can get away with that. I think there are people that can get from week to week within what little they're doing, they can get away with that. But if you're going to sustain an audience, I think you have to deliver most of what you say you're going to deliver, and you have to make what you deliver compelling. You know, because this is still an entertainment form. It's still competing with any other entertainment form. It's very easy to stay home and watch another episode of Breaking Bad. You can, you know, if you want something a little dirty and a little controversial, you don't have to go watch wrestling.
Yeah, but I've been told before, well, you're the only one that actually cares about this shit, like, to this level. And sometimes I sit around and kind of watch the audience, and I think, you know, sadly, they got something of a point there. It's just kind of like nobody pays that close attention.
And honestly, in my experience, no. I understand how you can get to that point because you begin to believe it, but I wouldn't have been able to continue to do what I enjoy doing if there wasn't the payoff of actually getting an audience to respond and hopefully attracting a greater audience in that response. It doesn't always work, but it's the holy grail of what little I get to do in wrestling, you know, as a half-assed booker. So
I guess I'm just thinking,
to me, that's very, very important. Other people just book shows,
yeah,
and that's different.
I guess I'm just thinking if somebody pulled a stunt like that and nobody showed up at the next show, or the fans just completely shit all over a show, you know, that obviously would send a message. But you see rare examples of that. But, you know, by and large, and I'm talking shows that are like longtime weekly shows, you don't see a lot of that. A lot of the people just accept whatever's thrown in front of them. I mean, how about you, Larry? How do you feel about that? Do you think people just accepted it after a while?
I think it's a huge difference between going to shows now and going to shows 25 years ago is that, yeah, I think there's a tendency, and I don't think it's so much true at Anarchy because Anarchy, as you were saying, Bill,
no,
it's story-based and you deliver the story. But people are just putting – shows where they're putting matches out there, I think it is more just accepted whatever happens, happens, and it's not questioned, those kinds of things. I mean, when I used to go to the Omni in Atlanta – I mean, the people who sat ringside were rabid fans, and if somebody wasn't there, they wanted to know why they weren't there. And it better, and of course, but in those days, it would be explained, too.
And remember, you just said something that I think you mentioned what little I'm able to accomplish in the thing I do, Anarchy. I was involved in something else before that, and at the same time, Rampage. When Rampage started getting bitched at, when their stuff became inconsistent.
Yep.
At least most people say that. You know, I'm not necessarily blaming anybody. I'm just saying the rap was, you know, if we had a rap, it's like Steven said we was on last time, is that we weren't necessarily always exciting because we're building to something. That's my – I added the last part. But the reality was after Jimmy and I were not involved, he began to think that there was some really good stuff, but – all of a sudden, the organization aspect of it, why they were doing it and where they were going, seemed to have vanished. And also, you know, it ends up then those become the problems even in good promotions. I think there's a combo package on what makes things work and fail. Admittedly, if you don't deliver what you're saying you're going to deliver, there's a problem. But also, if you just are putting matches on, A, you're under a different standard at that point. And I think that's what happened to Rampage is they were under one standard when there was storytelling, and then all of a sudden the storytelling became problematic.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you began to get confused. Well, wait, now are they just a spot show or are they doing other stuff? I have less of a problem when people don't show up on spot shows because if anybody, you know, which means something is not based on a storyline. This guy did something, this guy that drew this thing back. If you don't have that and you're just putting these guys out against these guys, and that's the example of the show you went to, Larry, just people wrestling in a bar.
Yep.
There was no story in that. It was somebody's either going to do a good or bad job and somebody's going to get over as the baby face of their heel. It was just a little spot show.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this.
Honestly, I don't care who's there if they're doing just that because I don't think anybody matters at that point, but that's a whole separate argument.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this. and I think I already know the answer, but do you see the trend ever going back to promotions being forced to deliver what they say, or do you see it continuing the way it's going?
I think there will be an ongoing problem of people not delivering what they say they're going to deliver and trying to escape their own personal responsibility. I aspire to the business always delivering more than that, and at least in, you know, both sides of what I do, which is somewhat creative, and then I'm booking boy, I try to make sure the people I say are going to be there are there. And the opposite side is whatever I say is going to happen, I try to make happen. Or I try to make what does happen understandable if it can't happen the way I thought it was going to. And in theory, you know, the business should aspire to that at every level. You should always try in an entertainment business to deliver the best job you can. If you're a singer and your throat sucks and you have a cold, you still do the best job you can. You still go tell them that, you know, you're probably going to suck tonight. But you go out and you do the best job you can. Where a lot of promoters fail is that they really don't care. They're really not promoters. They're just people that are putting matches into a ring, putting a ring up, and attempting to draw a crowd. And the end game is the opportunity to hopefully make money and to get a rub off the wrestling business in their own minds.
And they will tell you that they're doing what works for their audience. That's another line I've heard many times.
Well, usually it's more what works for them.
Yeah, I know. I know that. But that's the line. We do what works here, man. I've heard that many times. So.
That, you know,
hey, what do you say we move on to
their audience?
Yeah.
I think the goal is always to challenge your audience, not to placate to your audience and deliver the least you can do. You should always try to deliver the most you can do.
Agreed.
How about at this point we move on to what was going to be the primary topic for the show, but since Mr. Behrens was tardy, we moved on to something else. But let's go on to talk about the expectations of people getting into the wrestling business, realistic and otherwise. And Bill, I'll let you start with this.
Well, I mean, I mentioned to you earlier, and I use this with the people I work with, good or bad, my primary job in the business has been developing talent. Whether they make it is always problematic, but the key is to try to take whatever they have and help them figure out who they are, the character they want to project, and how to do something with that. And the problem frequently is that in the process of that, I'm known then as somebody that's helped a few people accomplish something. So I get, inquiries all the time from people. And you look at some of these folk and you go, okay, you're ugly, you're fat, you're wearing a T-shirt, you're not wearing good gear, and part of what you're writing me is you don't understand why you haven't made it. I've frequently wondered whether wrestlers, some, live through life waking up and going into a bathroom that has a clown mirror. And the clown mirror is the one where if you're skinny, you look at it and you're fat. If you're fat, you look at it and you're skinny. It has this ability to warp the reality of who you are. So that somehow, instead of being skinny, you're muscular. Instead of being fat, you're muscular. And I've had people literally coming in. I've been in the business 15 years and I've been held back. And you look at the guy, and you're going, no, you haven't been held back. You've probably been held up. You know, there was no possible way you could have actually done anything. And for a while, when I first started trying to develop a talent, I was trying to be really nice to people. I would be as optimistic as I could. Finally, I got to the point where it was, what the hell are you looking at? You know, if you're fat, if you're out of shape, and you don't have good gear, where do you see that guy getting over? And I think there's a large quantity of that in what permeates what we call independent wrestling in particular, a diversity of people who continue to say they're working hard. And to quote Jody Hamilton, not working smart or something like that. But the reality is there's a ton of that in the wrestling business. There's a large group of people that show up on shows, and as we talk about the impact on the wrestling business, not delivering what you're supposed to deliver, what you're supposed to deliver, somebody that can suspend disbelief. That's
yes.
what wrestling is supposed to be about. And there's a huge quantity of people that go out and can't do any of that.
Okay, Bill, agree or disagree, I think the biggest mistake the wrestling business ever made was at the point, and I don't know exactly when this happened, probably can't be pinpointed, but at the point that instead of trying to run these delusional wannabes away, breaking their leg or just beating them up or just running them off, when it came to, okay, let's make money off these people and let them think they're in. That injected so much poison, and that's when the real problems we have today began. Agree or disagree?
No, I very much so. And there's a add-on to that, that a lot of these people came saying they would spend money. There's an awful lot of independent promotions that have had folk that they've accepted money from that they put on camera that never should have been on camera or should have never been in front of a crowd.
But these people, over the years,
I've had numerous people do that, try to come to me with that opportunity.
But these people that take money from students are also some of the same people that bitch about the way things are now. And they kind of created the issues, and
there's a minor difference there, and I hate to differentiate it, but it's actually true. There was always an aspect of the business, and this goes back to even the good old days. Remember now, whenever we talk about how great the business was, we used to wrestle bears. So it only gets so good. But the reality is we go back into the past at some level, and there are tons of stories of people showing up that the Andersons, you know, Gene would get in the ring and hook and just kill. Or Stu would get in the ring and kill, or Sarge would get in the ring and kill, you know, or their leg would be broken by Hiro Matsuda. Any number of people that came in that probably didn't deserve a shot. So it was always laid back on we used to make them suffer. But the reality was most of the people that decided they wanted to be a wrestler were dissuaded because they probably didn't have a chance. And the few that survived were able to hopefully make a career out of it. The difference today is we are less likely to hurt the people that shouldn't be around. We are less likely to dissuade people.
Yeah.
We're more likely to embrace them than we used to be.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this.
The process is similar, but the bar has changed slightly.
Yeah, and, you know, back in the day, the idea was, you know, let's see how bad this person really wants this, you know, and most of the wannabes weren't going to come back under those conditions. The few that did kind of earned their spot at the table, I guess. But let me ask you this, Bill. What is the right reason to get into the wrestling business?
First of all, you really need to enjoy the process of wrestling, all of the various aspects of it, the storytelling, the physicality, the pain. It takes a very unique person to learn to fall down repeatedly and to like it. Either you do or you don't. There's really no gray area on that, and I know that definitively. Either you get comfortable bumping or you don't. And only the rare group of people where their brain all of a sudden stops working and they start doing what they need to do without thinking about it create great wrestlers. There are no great wrestlers that truly think through what they're doing. The great wrestlers do it, and it comes very naturally. And one thing leads to another, and the storytelling aspect and all of it comes together in a flow. It's why wrestling in its purest form is an art form. And those that do it at their highest level are artists. And that's what the business aspires to at a great level. But much like in any form of it, much like in art, you know, there are great painters, and there are people drawing in crayon. What we aspire to is to have more great artists. Frequently, we're left with people that are working with crayons.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, you know, I'm going to go ahead and use the dreaded F word at the risk of being chastised, but the fake word. You know, I think a lot of people, especially independents, their idea is it doesn't matter if they're 4 feet tall. It doesn't matter if they're 600 pounds. It doesn't matter because this is actually not a sport. This is a performance. How do you feel about that, Bill? So it should be open to all shapes, all sizes, all creeds, all genres.
The answer to part of that is yes. It should be open to all of those shapes and sizes. And the second half of it is you have to find a way to be believable within that reality. One of the people I've worked with for years is Slim J, Jeremy Boyd. No one who has watched him wrestle believes he's a little guy once the match starts. I had, and Steve Platinum has been highly supportive of Taco, who's now Supernatural, Juan Delgado, who I've worked with off and on for years. I have trouble with his offense. Yet, within the context Steve books him, he's been very successful. I think size is a challenge, but believability can be accomplished at any variety of levels. I've been able to work with some of the smallest people in the business and get them over and make them believable. And we've had a lot of large people that some people would call fat, who have been the scariest people you've ever wanted to see. You know, Iceberg could be an example of that within my experience. Guy that if you look at him walking down the street, he just looks like a fat guy. But everything he did was extremely believable, and you believed he could beat even the, you know, roughest guy in the world.
How important is believability now, though? I mean, the argument could be made that
believability is essential.
Now, even now.
Believability is essential. Too many people don't deal with believability, but
right.
If you're watching a movie and you don't believe the plot and you don't buy the characters and you don't see that guy as that character and you don't believe what they're doing nor their motivation, the movie may play and you may end up getting to the end of it and you may have had a fulfilling minor experience and believe you got your money's worth, but you're not going to remember it unless the characters resonate. The same will always be true for wrestling. So believability is the key of professional wrestling. Size is not the problem. Believability is always the problem. And then once you have believability, you have to give the person something to do. And that what they do has to be compelling once you've established that the character is worth paying attention to.
Now, when you say believability, so you're talking within their character, within their performance. You don't mean that you want people to think that this is a sport. Is that the context you're saying it in?
I think the greatest moments in wrestling is when believability can happen. And I've had plenty of moments where there has been the willing suspension of disbelief. And it's not as hard as we suggested it can be at times. Again, I don't have to believe to watch a great movie and to get involved
right.
in it. I can still watch
right.
Brian's song and cry.
It's you
know,
you
using in. A really old example. You know, Gail Sayers, Brian Piccolo, they're dying, the
yeah.
music plays, you cry. That's a guy thing. But the reality is you believe that moment and the actors are able to portray it for you. I believe that intrinsically is the high note of wrestling's potential is the believability aspect. That we don't fulfill on that as much as we should is a shame, but it's still the holy grail of everything we do. The moments where I've frequently told my wrestlers, not getting a response out of the crowd, literally dead silence, is frequently a greater response than a pop.
Yeah. The silent heat, yeah. Now, do you find that most of these young guys that come in now, do most of them stars in their eyes and are thinking WWE, or do you get some that are pretty realistic that just really just want to do it on a local level? Or what are the percentages on that, would you say?
Well, there's two answers to that. First of all, you have to decide what you want to do when you get into the business. If
yeah.
you're getting in to simply entertain yourself and others on the weekend, that's one thing. And at that point, how you frame your career is different than if you are actually trying to get somewhere. And if you, in this present marketplace, if you're trying to get somewhere, there's a very narrow avenue. You know, there's WWE if you really get hired. There's TNA potentially. There's Ring of Honor at some level. And then there's other shit, you know. And you know, a few guys can make some money in Japan and some people can go to Mexico and blah, blah, blah. But, or there's just the weekend warrior thing. Then there's the high and low end of that. There's the young guys that want to be the up-and-comer on the weekend warrior thing. And then there's the older guys that are simply there because they always have been. I've never wanted to be really part of any of that, yet, interestingly, and I'm aware of it, in what I've perpetuated and what I've booked and been involved in, I end up having a lot of that, not because the people weren't trying, but because it's a hard business to break out. And you end up having extremely talented people sometimes who did all the stuff they should have done.
Yeah, go nowhere.
They get a spot here, they get a spot there. You know, in Nashville, Chris Michaels might be an example. He did frequent WWE spots back in the day, and then the problem was he had done so many, they stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, look at Anarchy, an example. I could bring out 900, you know, different people. Michael Judas is a minor example, yet he's accomplished. He's been a champion in Puerto Rico. He had a spot with TNA for a while, but I always thought he should be able to do more. You look at Jeremy Bain, you know, who is one of the better workers that I've had the pleasure to be around for quite a while, and he's a guy that anybody wants on a show, and they always expect a lot from, and he actually can draw, tells a story, does all those things, but he never got to the next level. Yet, part of him still wants to. You know, so it's a very tough thing. It's much like acting. There's always going to be, you know, very good repertory theater people that never get beyond that, yet are people that can mentor other people to get further. Jeremy would be the example of that in wrestling. But the aspiration of everyone getting in should be to go as far as you possibly can. If your aspiration going in is to perform on Saturday in the same place all the time, then it's a hobby.
Well, that was going to be my question. What do you want to hear from guys? Do you want to hear guys say, Bill, I want to go to WWE? Or does that make you kind of cringe when they say that? Or do you prefer
no,
when
I'd,
they're
I'd
actually
rather, even if the guy's fat and stupid, I'd rather him say he has the aspiration to do that because then I can challenge him as to how he possibly thinks he can accomplish it. I'd rather people throw it at the wall and fail. Life should be an exercise in failure as much as, you know, getting through. If you're not trying and you don't fail, then you're really not living. And wrestling is part of that, and at a great level is a terrible taskmaster in that only a very narrow group of people will ever truly figure out how to be a wrestler at an elite level. And even those people, those that get it, only a few of those will click with an audience.
Yeah, is that something you struggle with? You know, if you see somebody, just say a fat guy, you know he's more than likely not going to WWE. Do you find yourself saying that to the guy, or do you find yourself saying, well, maybe I just shouldn't step on this guy's dream? I mean, it's kind of a ticklish area for you, I would think.
Depends. There are people where I've had to be blunt with them, even if they have some level of skill. Then there are others where you want to keep encouraging them. You know, if you use the larger man as an example, Iceberg had an opportunity. As Edward Chastain, he appeared on pay-per-view for TNA and then only went as far as it did, but he got the spot. He got to that show. Right now I'm working with a young man who goes by the name Jeter, who has all the raw skills necessary but has absolutely the wrong body type to be paid attention to at least the WWE level because they just really don't pay attention to that. I've pushed him toward TNA at various points, showing the matches that he's done with Michael Judas. He's still green. He still has a lot of ways to grow. But what he's doing, if you have the pleasure of going in and watching a match that Jeter does, he brings a level of believability, and if he fails in delivering that, he's the first one to be pissed at himself. And that's the aspiration. Be believable within whoever you are. Slim J is believable as a small guy. Mike Posey has become believable as a small guy. Corey Hall as a young guy is believable as a small guy. Kyle Matthews is believable as a small guy. Then Jeter, believable as a big, somebody might say fat guy. But he's believable. Good mobility. His stuff's impactful. He sells in the right places. He doesn't sell in the right places. The storytelling aspect of wrestling is the redemption of wrestling. And those that embrace it and learn how to mold themselves to the business within what they bring it and deliver the most they can with what they've got always have that potential. That's the position of wrestling. Unfortunately, I think, and this is a total tangent, I think part of what WWE's new process of doing cosmetic training in Orlando and putting 100-and-something people into a development to train the same basic style, I think one of the unfortunate side effects of that is you're going to miss some of the spontaneity and some of the uniqueness that used to be the bread and butter of wrestling.
And the thing is,
where characters get developed organically as opposed to in a process.
And WWE is this whole show itself, because Bill, I think they've left so much money on the table because some people take longer to develop and have a unique skill set, and WWE is just like this sausage factory, you know, and you know, they just don't let some people properly cook, and they, you know, there's some people that could have been great, and they got rid of them before they bloomed.
Probably so, but we'll never know.
Right.
In any entertainment form, good, bad, popular, unpopular, at the beginning point of a career is subjective at a very high level. Once a few people like somebody, then they become popular simply because everybody thinks they are. You know, you see that particularly in, you know, whatever the hottest thing is today. And music seems to predominate that. But what WWE has done, good and bad, is they've created a process to create a cookie-cutter version of a wrestler, and then they're going to anoint them with gimmicks and allow the gimmick to frame who they are. I think one of the areas that they're going to be suffering from is the last group of people that got over came in with something of identity of who they already were. That would be Punk and then Daniel Bryan. Beyond those two, most everybody was told who they were going to be and given their name. And, you know, even though Daniel Bryan could be said, they gave him his name, but he really didn't. They allowed him to be a little bit of who he was. I think that's a minor problem. I don't think it's necessarily, and I know some of the people in WWE don't believe in it as much. I know Steve Regal would prefer to go by what he sees in the ring and the potential of that. Then we can take these two guys that, you know, we got from Mexico, and now we're going to make them matadors. Not that that's a bad gimmick. You know, Terry Taylor came up with it. It's not a bad gimmick. It might actually work. You know, the Wyatts, not a bad gimmick. But the gimmick preceded the talent. The talent was casted to the gimmick, and that's something that's going on in wrestling now more than it did before, particularly at the WWE level. There, you know, Vince did it back in the day when he would just bring people in and go, you know, snap his fingers and go, "You're a plumber," you know, and then the guy's a plumber.
Yeah.
But that was more, you know, simplistic. This is more a business plan.
Well, I'm not sold on the matadors. I don't know, but Bill, let me ask you one more question on this subject. We've all dealt with the extremely delusional type of person that's around wrestling, like the real Lulu, the real out there guy. This is a chicken and egg type question, but I'll just ask it. Does wrestling attract these people or create these people, would you say?
I'll answer that question. It attracts them. I think there's something about the wrestling business that attracts people, that tends to attract more people with the funhouse mirror view.
Yeah.
Of themselves.
Yeah.
There's something in the nature of pro wrestling.
I can't disagree with that. There are two groups of people that I've dealt with. One group skews to me, it seems. There are people who have had fragile and or conflicted lives. And wrestling is and artistically wrestling has been a way that they found a way to move out of those, and frequently I've dealt with those people, and I found them to be frequently the most creative people, the people that are trying to do something. There's a group of people that simply like the wrestling and want to go play and really don't have a clue what the frick they're doing. And I've never embraced that group. In fact, most of the time, that group of people get beat up in my environment. You know, not that we hurt somebody, but if you come in and you're simply, you know, craptastic, then you're going to be treated that way. You know, we're not a, you know, there's a group of talent where the best they can do to be a heel would be to do a you suck, you swallow session in the ring. Or they don't have any greater way to get over than that. And then there's people that understand they can get over by nuance, by little things. And it's those little things that used to allow us to believe in the old day and suspend disbelief. I was watching the Mid-South DVD that just came out. And while I was disappointed, actually, in it of a real documentary, I was pleased with some of the quality of the matches and how Bill Watts developed the characters. You know, and if you look at almost all of the examples of the way those guys got over, he didn't give somebody a character that he pulled out of his ass. The character was a great deal of the person. And I think that the people that succeed in wrestling and the people that get somewhere in wrestling are the people that are allowed, that can figure out who they are and tell a story within the context of that person. And then there's all these people that have, by the day they first decide they're going to be a wrestler, before they ever paid their $2,000 to train and never accomplished anything except they paid that money, they already had their wrestling name of Kid Excitement. And that was who they were going to be. You know, they were always going to be that guy. You know, no matter how big they were, no matter how ugly they were, they were always going to be Kid Excitement. And, you know, and that was the guy they were going to be. They were the clown mirror people that get into it and have this perception that they've accomplished something. You know, I had a kid who wanted to come into Anarchy, and I explained the realities of the way we do things, and he got offended at the tail end explaining to me that, you know, he's very popular and he's, you know, and that I should want to use him and that he normally gets $60. And yet the last show he was on, there were 25 people there. So,
I'm sure
he's popular and I'm sure that he's made all the right decisions in his life.
And Bill, about the Mid-South DVD, I just finished watching it too, and it's very choppy release. They could have put so much more into it, but I enjoyed most of the action. But your point on Bill Watts is so well made, you know, these characters that were mostly themselves and how he developed and how he let them be stars. But Bill, on the other side of that coin, Bill Watts' big mistake was trying to find only black guys to replace the irreplaceable Junkyard Dog, and that failed.
That's a narrow problem of a idiosyncrasy he had. He had such great success. You know, Ernie Ladd, you have to remember, Ernie Ladd was in the office with him and was helping him in booking. And they both believed that an African-American, particularly in Louisiana, was going to be a big deal because it had been. They regrettably made a long series of mistakes, and it goes on. I mean, they didn't even chronicle all of them because they didn't get into Brickhouse Brown and all the other various people that were thrown out there. But that was a big mistake. But literally, that was the pimple on the ass of what was accomplished by Mid-South. That was a true detriment, but one of the areas that Mid-South innovated that eventually, you know, and if you watch the recent Crockett DVD, the indie one that was done, is Watts was always embraced tag team wrestling very early and really pushed that in storytelling, and particularly as it linked to other singles wrestlers, and that became a template in a lot of other areas. In fact, I would think, without knowing it per se, I think a lot of what ended up happening over in North Carolina came out of a lot of what Crockett had already, whatever Bill had already started, because he was already doing that on Memphis, was already doing a lot of tag team stuff. And then Crockett started picking it up after being a singles promotion coming out of that when Scott started booking more tag team stuff. But there were other people that were doing it already that would already were picking up the fact that that was a way to capitalize and then focus on an ethnic or regional star. Remember, wrestling was always built on ethnic or regional stars going back from the very beginning. The New York promotion was ridiculous with that. You know, is they could get over guys that could barely pick up, you know, could barely work. You know, Bruno was never a great worker, but he was a hell of a personality.
But, Bill, what my point was, I was kind of emphasizing your point, the time that Watts tried to make these guys be something that they weren't, that didn't work. That was kind of my point. That was an example
right.
when he...
All geniuses have a tendency to have, you know, some really bad stuff. At one point I thought Manchild was going to get over really good in Wildside, and it didn't work out that well. I thought Terry Knight could be Terry Knightinelli and made him an Italian. Everyone's going to just do that.
I told you that one wasn't going to work.
Every once in a while, you just do some really stupid stuff.
I don't understand how the wrestling business...
And Watts did that also, but if you weigh the good against the bad, Watts will always go down one of the guys that truly figured out how to get people over as characters.
Absolutely.
And he was really good at and he saw talent and he was able to maximize on it, again, using the WWE documentary, for example, he got much more credit for having done anything with Hellwig and Sting because he did nothing with Hellwig. Hellwig was pretty much eliminated about 5 seconds into his run there. But he did do a lot with Sting because he ended up putting with Eddie Gilbert and they had a run there with him and the Steiner and that stuff. So I thought there was actually some shortchanging on what was really accomplished rather than these are guys that WWE eventually used, which is the way it was framed. If they had really paid more attention to what Watts accomplished, he gave up on Hellwig, sent him to Fritz von Erich. And that's where he finally got over as a dingo. But, before that, Jerry Jarrett had them, said, I can't do anything, sent him to Watts, Watts did a little bit with them, kept staying, and then Hellwig went down to Fritz, and that's where Fritz just made him, don't do anything kind of sensation, which is the only thing he was worth doing. So everybody, all of the good people have successes and failures. The key of the people that stand out in terms of booking the development of talent are the ones that hit more than miss. It's not the effort of doing it. I'm still entertained, for example, by Driver Tony. I still think that's a good gimmick.
Hey, Tony Falk's a good driver. Go ahead, Liz.
Driver Tony was a hell of a gimmick.
I just don't understand how we got to the point in wrestling, as you've been making the point about Bill Watts' creation of characters based on drawing something that's in the individual and bringing that out in some way that develops an interesting character. And then we're talking about WWE completely, dropping that. I don't get it. It seems like that's something really important.
Comes up with a character and tries to find someone to personify it. And I think it's very difficult. Casting each of your roles in wrestling is very difficult. Ideally, wrestling should be developed by or more organically. Who am I should be something that's developed early on in the performer. And then realizing that the greatest aspect of the reality of that person is always going to be the best way to go. And interestingly, WWE's greatest successes have been in collaboration with people rather than things they've simply created. There are examples of things that were just created that happened to work. Goldust could be an example of a character that was arbitrarily created, but at this point, I think few people would argue that Dustin hasn't figured out a way to make that character uniquely compelling based on what he brings to it. Mm-hmm. But it was just a character at first. It was just something given him. Kane could be an example of that kind of character. Yet it was a character that Glenn had done several other times under different names, either Unabomb or Doomsday in USWA. He'd done something similar. So all of a sudden, Kane. Okay, here's the name, here's the gimmick, but he had already been playing with that idea. He'd already had some moments with it. A lot of the stuff now is simply, all right, you look like a man. So it's like a mad TV thing. He looks like a man.
But the difference is, Bill, if you want to talk to Goldust, this did not – yes, it was Vince McMahon's idea, but he called Dustin Rhodes in, told him what the idea was, told him to go home and think about it. I mean, they let this cook for literally months before it was debuted. You know, it was actually a collaboration there. It wasn't just slapping something on a guy and saying, here, this is yours, make the best of it. You know, that's a big difference now, too.
And that it was organic in that aspects of it were either objected to or didn't work, they were able to change it. Kane would be similar. You know, the character that's evolved to today doesn't, you know, throw lightning bolts anymore. So we've strayed
on to a little different topic here, and I see our time is passing, and I think it'd probably be good to go to an ad for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with, hopefully, Stephen Platinum and his full disclosure segment.
Yes.
Medium Green Jacket.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Welcome back to Perception is Reality. I don't know who that guy was, the first part of that ad, but Larry, he's got a future in this business.
I'd say so.
Yeah. That was really embarrassing when with two out of four ads are mine. That sort of sucks.
You're a monopoly. You got a monopoly on it, Bill. You're taking over. You're no longer calling
me. I got a freaking monopoly going here. Well, you know, you try to get the voiceover work when you can.
The Illuminati?
We do not have, I don't see Steve on the line here. So,
what?
Yeah,
what?
if you guys want to carry on for a second here, let me see what I can do about that.
Okay, Bill, I did want to ask
you
a question.
Right.
I want to ask you a question about the Mid-South DVD since we were talking about it, and this is going to veer slightly off topic, but after watching those matches, you know, a lot of great stuff, but, and this is more of a booking question, but one thing that stuck out to me was, and it started to annoy me when I was watching it, was they could not do a match, especially they could not do a title match without having a ref bump, and that was becoming more and more annoyed. Did you have that feeling or no?
In the matches they selected, you had a tendency to see a decent amount of that, and it's one of the double-edged swords of booking. I know whenever we go into a show, right now with Anarchy, and I've been working for a long time with Todd Sexton's help, Todd Wiley, we'll go through and we'll go, okay, we have, like last show, we have 5 tag matches. How many hot tags are you going to do, and are they all going to be the same? How do you get out of this match and keep this guy strong and this guy strong and still, do a clean finish? I've always leaned toward clean finishes don't hurt anybody. And at the same time, you find yourself second-guessing that as you go through. I think frequently the matches that they had picked for the DVD, good or bad, were situations where they were in transition rather than resolving anything, and that led frequently to ref bumps and screw finishes, which normally are heel finishes and supposedly heat finishes. So I don't know that we necessarily saw the real storytelling aspect of it, because in general, Bill Watts learned the same way Jerry Jarrett did, the same way Dusty Rhodes did. They all learned at the altar of Eddie Graham down in Florida, where I started watching. And Eddie was brilliant. But Eddie also would do those minor, the ref bump, the other things, but they were never the payoff spots. They were always transition spots, yet frequently very memorable matches because you were expecting more at that moment. So the end result from the fan that was watching is frequently those screw finishes were memorable in what didn't get delivered. What happens way too much now is that an awful lot of booking is done protective of the talent so that this guy doesn't go under and this guy doesn't go under, and they're not used as selectively.
But as much as it started to annoy me, one thing I did like about it, and something you almost never see today, is there were times then when they bumped the ref, and the ref actually, he was able to get back up just off a shoulder tackle or something simple. There's nothing I hate worse than
the refs didn't die. There's a difference between selling and dying, and it's something we have to teach the wrestlers all the time. And frequently you have to teach the refs that they don't die either. Just the fact that they were hit doesn't mean they're dead. They have to find a way to believably sell the impact of what happens. Because I'm trying to imagine what it's like, if I'm a fan, and if I see somebody hit hard and the bump's realistic, I can buy them being down for a while. But if I don't see that, then them being down for a while just looks stupid.
But sometimes it's not the ref's fault. To me, it's just I put a lot of that on the booker when stuff just gets ridiculous overbooked and you have to have the ref down for three or four minutes. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Who would, it's multiple run-ins, 3 or 4 guys running in. Those are the finishes that I really – tend to hate. It's just,
whenever I've agented either at a small or a larger level, the key thing I try to bring as an agent to a match is the question, where's the ref? And frequently, as guys work their matches out, particularly on the indies, the ref and what the ref is doing at certain points isn't thought of, particularly in tag matches. We're going to do this. All 4 are going to be brawling in the ring, blah, 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 blah. And then you have to go, whoa, what happened to the ref? Where the hell is he? How did he all of a sudden have this authority and then he didn't? You've got to try to ask those questions. Booking is a process, as is laying out a match, is a process of asking questions. You have to ask, what's this guy doing? Why are you doing this? It's much more that process than it is do this, do this, do this, do this. If you book and you lay stuff out around questions, more often than not, you'll be better served.
Larry, are you back here, or should we keep going?
I am back, and I'm unable to. Speaking of advertising and not delivering.
Oh, here. we're guilty of it. We suck.
We are guilty of it.
Actually. Closure. We are delivering in that we have not delivered. But we are being honest about it, and we are providing full disclosure. I'm sure that young Mr. Platinum has a very good excuse for this. I I probably will blame Nemesis.
And Bill, this is due to circumstances beyond our control, is it not?
Yes, yes, as well it should be.
yes,
I'm sure there's something very important. You know, it may have something to do with Chip Day and a diet. It could have to do with anything.
Oh.
And not only that, Larry, we have one call get through, and isn't it apropos that it's Chicken Hat, our first and only
yes.
caller?
You know, before we do have another caller, it appears. Should we take a chance?
Let's go ahead. Let's close, and why not? Let's close out with this caller. Let's do it this way. Let's do it.
All right.
Hello again. This is
I'm home.
Been listening since 6:30.
You made it home.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry if I got cut off, but I was on the bus and I only had a limited amount of minutes on the cell.
Totally understand. We did what we could without you, Charles. It was all right.
I'm sure. I was listening to everything here.
Do you have any opinion you'd like to offer on what you heard during this last 45 minutes?
Well, I have one little opinion here. I believe the key to any successful angle is to make it believable. And I've seen most wrestlers that are actually believable. I even had experience in confronting with a couple.
Yeah, Charles, when you make physical contact with the wrestler, it becomes pretty real pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And one of the great things about wrestling is what can be believable can sometimes be unbelievable. For example, I believe that for a period of time we had the character of Super Barney over in Nashville, he was believable.
Yeah, he was. And for the most part, it still is.
Well, let me ask you this, Charles.
Yeah. Well, he's a superhero.
Let me ask you this, Charles. Do you prefer, like, the wild, over-the-top characters like a Super Barney, or do you prefer just more of the wrestlers, you know, in black trunks and boots and ring the bell and let's go?
Well, a little of both, depending on what the situation is.
Yeah. Because there's something to be said for both.
Do you have a favorite promoter in the Nashville or the extended Tennessee area? Do you have a favorite promoter in terms of your history going to shows?
Well, I would say the most I've been to recently is Southern All-Star Wrestling in Millersville. It does get wild out there every Friday night.
And you are part of that wildness, Charles. I mean, what yeah. I got to ask, what is it with you and Reno Riggins? What is it about Reno Riggins that brings out the wild man in you?
Well, for openers, he's a lying, cheating, self-centered, egotistical bigot.
But what do you really think?
It's not only Reno, Larry. Actually, Charles has a new nemesis, and I'm just going to tell you, Charles, I have it on good authority that this man I'm about to mention backstage at Shaw was like very concerned if you were there and had returned, and I'm speaking of one Cliff.
Yeah, a little creep.
I guess Compton went backstage after
it, you do realize that he was at one time WWE's Domino.
Yeah,
but I also happen to know he was part of a group in Ring of Honor known as Scum.
He's a scummy man.
I watched the show.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, a lot of times nobody mentions that. I don't, for the life of me, I don't know why. I seem to be the only one who knows this. I guess mainly because I watch Ring of Honor itself.
Hmm.
I have to admit, I'm impressed with what they do, although there are times they get a little confusing.
The Ring of Honor, there's too much going on at the Ring of Honor?
Well, I wouldn't say there's too much going on, but character-wise, it seems to be a little confusing. By that, I mean, it's hard to understand what side is which most of the time.
They haven't identified clear baby faces and heels, people for you to support or people for you to be upset at.
Exactly. Although there are a few wrestlers that are starting to get to me. I'm kind of into Kevin Steen, and then there's Jay Lethal. And
Jay Lethal's an entertaining guy. The Kevin Steen's a tough guy.
Oh, yeah. And then there's Unbreakable Michael Elgin that I seem to be into.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this. How do you be a heel in Ring of Honor in front of fans that basically won't boo a heel in the traditional sense?
It's something that Hunter and I have talked about in our conversations on
very
some of the characters.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish are in theory a heel team.
Yeah.
And part of the dynamic, the difficulty that they've had is because Kyle was brought up in the Davey Richards spot into I'm going to break my own submission hold kind of mentality. The end result is it's difficult to get beyond the work rate and to truly get into the characters. Now, and they've been making a deliberate effort recently to try to more specifically define that these guys are people that you can dislike. They're trying to find ways to do that.
But it's
a challenge because Ring of Honor has been established for years as a work rate company, and it had the catch-22 that its original premise was respect. You shook hands before, you shook hands after. The very first heel in the company was Chris Daniels, who didn't do that. And that's how they established their first basic heel. That also created the problem of how do you really create a heel if all you're doing is breaking the code to be a heel?
Right.
You have to find a way to be a traditional heel in the context of that. That was part of what they tried to do with Scum and have done with some other groups historically by getting somebody like a Steve Corino that's more of an old-school heel guy to be a heat magnet, try to draw attention to that.
Yeah, you can just watch Ring of Honor match, and you can watch the heel in the match, and you can just see these guys are just pining for some good old-fashioned boos and cheers. They would love to get it. They would love to have it, but it's tough to get there.
Well,
it's real tough to get.
Part of the problem is a combination of what's your platform and how can you get over. They're on television. They can only get a few matches in every hour show, and they can only expose about half their talent at any one time. It's part of the problem of having a 1 hour show. So the end result is nobody gets a lot of time, and if you don't have a lot of time, it's hard to take your time.
Yep.
And so everybody has to work harder to get something in, and the harder you work, particularly as a heel, the greater your work rate, the harder it is to be a babyface. The harder you work as a wrestler, the more likely you are a babyface, not a heel. If you have a very difficult time being a heel and work hard as a wrestler in the current marketplace because everybody will pop babyface or heel for a spot. So heels have to be the guy that slows down the action and grounds the action. And if you don't have a lot of time, you have to remember, back in the day, as Terry Taylor's story from the Mid-South thing, he had a 40-some minute match with Ric Flair.
Yep.
And by the end of it, Ric Flair was saying, okay, now it's your time 40 minutes in, and he's blown up. You know, that was the story. The heel had 40-something minutes that night to be a heel, to give the babyface the chance to get the comeback before he screwed him. Unfortunately, the luxury's not there now, so it's much harder to be a complicated storytelling heel now because you don't have the time.
But the thing is, even if you had the time, Bill, the sad reality is, some of these fans they're not going to boo a heel in the classic sense. They're just not. They're not there for that. And that's just, it's sad,
but again, they will boo a heel that doesn't deliver them the spots they want.
Yeah.
If the heel does cool shit, the heel will get a babyface pop.
Right.
Yeah, like at the Birmingham show, Adam Cole running out the clock in Iron Man, that got heat.
Yeah.
That got legitimate heat.
When I turned Jeremy Vane in Wildside the first time from being one of the top babyfaces, and he didn't believe it would work, I told him, and it was an Ole Anderson advice thing, I told him, you're going to win with 1-2, and on 2, you're going to grab a handful of tights. But you're not going to heal the entire match. You're going to be the same baby yeah. face you always were, but at the end, you're going to cheat. And from that day on, he was a heel. But it was hard, you know, and we had the time to get that match over within, you know, the little context we were doing. But that kind of patience is difficult to come to now in the way people are booked. There's a tendency, even for heels, that they want to hit something big. Every time you hit something big, you're going to get a pop. Doesn't matter who you are.
And that's great what Cole did, Larry, but and I like you got a reaction, but the other side of that is you can't have 8 heels running out the clock. You know what I mean? You can have one guy doing that. You can't have 5 guys doing that. So.
No, but it worked very well since he was, you know, in the position of just
right.
making his turn, and that really
yeah.
Yeah. helped cement it there with the running out the clock. So, I mean, it worked for what they were trying to do with him.
Yeah, it was very smart, very smart. Well, guys, I'm going to need to jump off here in a minute and get ready to go to work. So.
Well, we've run out our clock here, so
there we go. And we in full disclosure, we failed to deliver Steve Platinum.
But we will deliver him next time.
I'll bet you he's out to supper.
Promises, promises.
I'll bet you he's out to supper with Murder One and Josh Wheeler.
You can only hope. You can only hope. He's out having a lovely beverage with Nemesis. Yeah.
A beverage, he says.
A beverage.
No, a lovely beverage.
Well,
all right, guys.
It's been fun. We will return sometime during the month of November. Stay tuned to be announced our date. It'll be a Wednesday, possibly the third Wednesday. We'll see how that all works out. We'll see what happened with Steve Platinum and why he wasn't here tonight. And until then, we'll say adios from Perception
is
Reality.
Always in parting, we wish you peace, love, and soul.
Oh, no!
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to be. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.